Why, yes, it's time to talk to the voice of the number one team in the land in college men's basketball, the KU Jayhawks, and the 7-3 KU Jayhawk football team, Brian Haney. Just your average, ordinary, boring week, right? You play Kentucky in basketball, and now K-State, KU, Sunflower Showdown in Lawrence on Saturday. Just, I mean, you got to be just completely bored out of your mind, right, Brian?
Man, hopefully it's a week of whooping Wildcats. But, you know, not chalking anything up on Saturday, because obviously we haven't beaten those guys in 14 years, and it's been a long time coming, and it's obviously going to be a huge uphill battle to climb. But that was the goal setting out to start the week, and I don't know if we'll get them both or not, but we're certainly off to a nice start, taking the Wildcats of Kentucky down on Tuesday.
One of the biggest Jayhawk fans in our area, Brian, requested a song this morning on our Waterside Wake-Up show. We have a Throwback Thursday, and we take requests, and he called in, and he requested Sam Cooke, "A Change Is Gonna Come," and he dedicated that to the K-State fans because he's predicting KU to win on Saturday, and a change is going to come. I guess we'll find out Saturday around 9:30 if that's a really good premonition and prediction. And so I've already got a little banter going back and forth now between KU and K-State fans, because then a K-State fan requested a song that says, "That'll Be the Day," if you remember that song by Buddy Holly. So we're having some fun already on a Thursday. I love it. And so normally I would start with the number one team in the land beating Kentucky in basketball, but we're going to start with football and then get the basketball with you, Brian. Let me give you the question that you know is coming, the obvious question that everybody is asking, and that is, who is going to play quarterback for KU on Saturday night?
$1 million question. You know, when we hang up, I'm going to try to go out to practice and see if Bean does more today than he did yesterday. But it was a good sign that he was back taking a healthy amount of reps yesterday. It had been Cole Ballard to start the week before that. So, you know, it's going to be one of those two. It's not going to be Jalen Daniels. Although I will tell you, Jalen has been much more active and engaged and in terms of just being around the guys, pumping them up, reassuming that role of captain, because initially when the injury happened, you know, so much of his rehab was done away from the team that it almost felt like he was distant and not as connected, because he might come out for the last 10 minutes and just kind of stand on the sidelines. But all week long, he's been pumping his guys up. So I tell you that to say, I really appreciate seeing Jalen's leadership, even though physically it's just not going to happen in time to come back and impact this game. And it would be hard to imagine it happening before Cincinnati next week for him. So you're down to Jason and Cole. And Cole Ballard, we found out last night on Hawk Talk, was recently put on scholarship, so we can't call him the true freshman walk-on quarterback anymore. He's the true freshman scholarship quarterback. Will he be the starter? I don't know. But cool story that Lance shared about getting Cole's mom and dad on the phone. Of course, Cole's dad is the GM for the Indianapolis Colts, and they call him up out of the blue, and they break the news in Lance's office that Cole has been put on scholarship, and Cole's mom was tearing up, and his dad definitely proud. It was about 10 seconds of awkward silence. They couldn't tell if dad was tearing up too or not, and then all of a sudden, Chris Ballard, his dad, says, "Well, son, you better get your ass back to work." That's how the call wrapped up. But a super proud moment for the Ballard family, and obviously we were all so impressed with the composure he showed last week, being forced into a really unenviable spot and making the most of it. I mean, think about it. When he starts his first drive, keep in mind, he entered in the middle of one drive, but then when it was clearly going to be him the rest of the day, his starting field position is inside the one, you know, game hanging in the balance as we're already in a hole, and his childhood hero, Patrick Mahomes, is in the stadium watching over his shoulder. I mean, I don't know who was watching or listening to you when you took the air for the first time on your first real broadcast, but it probably wasn't whoever your number one broadcast hero is of all time. And Cole had Patrick Mahomes watching his every move. That's pressure right there. And I thought he went out and delivered admirably well. And, you know, do we win the game if Bean or Daniels is healthy? Yes. Because I think you can't convince me that Kansas doesn't at least punch one of those red zone trips in for a touchdown. We got just 6 points in 3 trips inside the red zone. About to take on a K-State team that's 80% touchdowns inside the red zone this year. We surely would have one of those two. Having said that, could you have asked for much more from a true freshman that came here just a few months ago as a walk-on? No, not at all. I mean, he gave you about everything you could have hoped for. So I'm so impressed and proud of him. and really hopeful that if we have to lean on him again, he can draw from that experience for confidence. But I'm most hopeful that it's Jason Bean, because we got 19 seniors to honor on Saturday, and his legacy is a unique one and a very special one. He deserves one more time taking that field at the booth.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Where is KU sitting health-wise at wide receiver? I know Grimm was banged up and had to leave the game against Texas Tech. Tanaka Scott had a couple opportunities, didn't make the play that would have helped Kansas in that game. And, of course, you know, when you got guys that come in, you know, you need reps and practice and so forth. And when you have somebody go down, obviously we talk about quarterback, but it happens at other positions too. It could be your starting left guard or left tackle. And there's a reason that a guy is a backup and another guy is the starter. There's a difference between the two. But you hope you have good quality depth that you can just kind of not skip a beat for the most part. But where does Kansas sit in regards to their wide receiver injuries?
I can't tell you on Grimm, because I was in Chicago for the bulk of the practice week. Like I said, I'll probably know more today, but that was a situation where, you know, it was hopeful to just be a one-week injury, but we'll just have to see how he progresses. It was not a long-term thing by any means. But beyond that, I think they've cultivated enough receiver depth if they can get Trevor Wilson back. Last week, Wilson initially was not out on punt return, and then they decided to put him in there just to catch the ball as a sure-handed guy on punt return. But if you'll recall, before his leg injury, not only was he making waves in the return game, but he was becoming one of Bean's favorite targets. And he's been shaken up since the Oklahoma game and not at full strength. So those are two guys you'd like to get back, because with Arnold and Skinner as your most established weapons and a lot of those guys, both of those guys, a lot of the time, like to go vertical. It would be nice to have some slanting across the middle of the field type guys and shorter throw possession receiver type guys. Otherwise, you know, I look to see them involve tight ends more, which we saw last week when it was Ballard, and obviously trusted Mason Fairchild in some key moments. And so I think they'll be fine in terms of having enough. But to be honest, you know, we've not seen Tanaka emerge as quickly as they'd hoped. And he, I thought, had one of the best blocks of any receiver all season, but sprung Devin Neal for the 60-yard touchdown. But you want to see him come up with some more clutch catches. There was one specific drop that cost Kansas last week. And so your point is a good one, bringing that up. And I can't give you a great answer as we talk here at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday. But hopeful, as they head into tomorrow, they'll have a clearer picture on who's going to be available. And at this point, I think that, you know, with what we've shown creatively, with the Wildcat formation, no pun intended this week, but you could see, you know, more of that with Devin Neal on the direct snaps. And, you know, it's not like we have Jalen Daniels running with five wide receivers and airing it all over the field anymore anyway. So it's one position where, because of the complexities of our offense and the run focus that we could have at times, it's not quite as necessary. But moments like last week where Tanaka had that drop and where you clearly didn't have the Trevor Wilson, Luke Grimm influence on the game that you might have had in key junctures of previous games, it was a reminder that you do need those guys still. Just maybe not quite as much as we would have said we needed them at the onset of this season, when we thought we were going to look a lot different in terms of passing influence this year.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week by Anderson Insurance Agency, the farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. All right, your thoughts on Kansas State. This is a team that they have had some struggles on the road, although when you look at their road losses, they didn't look good at the time, but they lost on a 61-yard field goal at the gun against Missouri, who's a top 10 team now, according to the College Football Playoff rankings. They lost at Stillwater. KU also lost at Stillwater, and that was a few weeks after Oklahoma State was bombed out of the building by South Alabama, and they regrouped, and that at the time seemed like a bad loss for K-State, but now Oklahoma State's right there with a chance to be in the Big 12 title game. And they have certainly played extremely well at home, blowing out the opposition left and right. But this game is not at home. It's in Lawrence. Will Howard's playing a lot better football than he did when they lost to Oklahoma State. What are your thoughts on what you see from Kansas State coming into this matchup? We know K-State can run the ball. DJ Giddens, Treshawn Ward, their defense, they've had some key injuries, K-State, on defense. Special teams, I don't know how many times you and I have talked about over the last probably 7 or 8 years that special teams almost always is in favor of Kansas State. And when that happens, it's really tough to beat the other team when you're already down a phase.
Yeah, they do it as well as anybody and have 30 years on special teams. But Kansas was able to hire away Sean Snyder. I say hire away. He spent last year at Illinois. But you know what I mean. He was their ace in the hole for so many years as a national special teams coordinator of the year, former All-American punter there. He has no doubt helped make Kansas special team better, albeit in a special assistant to the head coach role as opposed to special teams coordinator. He's been terrific, though. We're really lucky to have him, and it was a really joyful opportunity for Jayhawk fans to kind of celebrate him being a Jayhawk last night out at Hawk Talk, and he was one of our featured guests, and he had a warm reception as we realized that, hey, we've been trying to beat him and his dad for 30 years, and they're two of the great father-son combinations to ever do it at the college level, and if you can't beat him, hire him, right? And obviously, dad is retired, but still comes to the games to support his son. I did ask Sean on air, so when your dad's come over to Lawrence to watch you play three or four times this year to watch you coach, did he actually wear blue? And he said, no. Dad's in his signature black suit with a gold tie, and he's not going to deviate from that. But I thought that was kind of fun. But anyways, we should be better in that regard. It should not be the glaring hole and gaping wide separation between K-State special teams and Kansas special teams. It was last year, and there was a key slip by O.J. Burrows on a punt return play to put us in a hole early. Got to stay away from some of those self-inflicted wounds. And could Kansas be the team that breaks off a big play in special teams to swing the balance in this game? We'll see. But I will say, I thought your recap was spot on when you look at the ebbs and flows of their season, the ebbs and flows of Will Howard's season. I mean, over the first six games, 9 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Over the last 4, 12 touchdowns, 1 interception. He has been much, much better. I think Brooks has always had our number in terms of the receiving and return game. I worry about him. I think, Giddens obviously is a big-time talent, but the Florida State transfer they brought in, Ward, has been great as well. And so it's a rushing attack that's, right there amongst not just the conference's best, but the nation's best. And Kansas is going to have to do a better job than what we saw on the first 2 drives versus Texas Tech, where you saw the Red Raiders take whatever they wanted. I mean, it was tough to watch with Taj Brooks just ripping off 8, 10, 12 yards. And then Kansas made adjustments after that, and I thought was really, really good in bottling up the run. I don't know if they'll be able to do that as well against Kansas State, who also has dynamic quarterback rushing with not only Will but Avery, too. And he comes in, the young freshman, with 5 TDs versus Texas Tech. There's just a lot of weaponry you have to worry about there. But I do think Kansas, if they can play close to full strength at the quarterback position and some of the receiver questions you asked about earlier, I do think we match up as well as we have in the last decade and a half. So we should have the best chance we've had to win since 2008. But time will tell if indeed number 9 is at quarterback for Kansas on Saturday. And hopefully Bean is, and he gets to celebrate his senior moment. But if not, then here we go, Cole Ballard. It's your time to shine. And nothing would build a legacy bigger than former walk-on, true freshman, beats K-State in his first career start. I mean, they'd almost start putting the statue up when the demolition team comes in to break down Memorial Stadium on Monday, if Cole was able to do that. And by the way, that is what's happening. We've been told, get everything you want out of the press box, because starting next week, it's all coming down very quickly after that final game is played. So I don't know if the Gerstner family's coming over or not, but a lot of nostalgia, not just on senior day for this 19-member senior class, but for anyone that's come to the 101-year-old Memorial Stadium, it will look nothing like it does now in just a few weeks in terms of demolition, and then next year playing in a half stadium prior to 2 years from now, the unveiling of the new David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium. So for any of your listeners in Glen Elder and Beloit that are making their way over there, soak it all up, take a few pictures. Starting next week, it'll never look the same. And Coach was joking about can the fans take some bleachers with them or whatever. He said, I saw how quickly the fans took our goalposts after we beat Oklahoma. They ought to take some bleachers out the door with them. But in jest, of course. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun Saturday. And boy, you'd hate to say your rival beat you on your last ever game in that stadium, right? Yeah. Let's protect that house in that regard and leave with a fond memory, don't you think?
Yeah, I hope, one, that Bean plays. Two, I hope that this is not a blowout. I hope this game lives up to 7-3 versus 7-3. and they're both ranked in the top 25 of the college football playoff rankings. And I hope that this game comes down to the fourth quarter where everybody is on pins and needles, and it could go either way. And it is interesting, we talked about special teams, the kickers. Seth Keller's had issues. The kicking game's had issues for Kansas. Certainly witnessed that big time at Oklahoma State. Kansas State had all kinds of kicking issues at Texas, and Chris Tennant's missed some short field goals and an extra point. So the kickers could be the difference in this game. And honestly, I can't tell you who I would choose to have the advantage, because both of them, I think, have made their fan bases extremely nervous even when they kick extra points.
Well, that's a great point. And I would tell you that, well, I shouldn't put names behind this, but there's definitely some growing belief in Owen Peeper-Gurtis amongst the coaching staff. And that's not to say there's any disbelief in Keller, but I think that the range in which they would turn it over to Peeper-Gurtis, it used to be at the start of the season, well, he'll kick anything 50-plus yards. And then it was maybe 45-plus. Now it might be 40, so don't be surprised if the sophomore, Owen Peeper-Gurtis, there's a big kick anywhere in that 40-yard range, if he's the one they actually summon. But don't give up on Seth just yet either. Veteran kicker, Lance may want to go with a fifth-year guy if the game's on the line late.
Well, if it's on the line late, that'll be fun, no doubt about it. Let's talk about basketball for a few minutes here. The number one team in the land, KU, beating Kentucky, down 14 in the second half. I don't think there's anybody that actually watches KU basketball that didn't think Kansas was going to rally and at least make things interesting, come all the way back and win. Certainly Hunter Dickinson gets the accolades, 27 points, 21 rebounds. DeJuan Harris was outstanding, 5 of 6 on threes, 23 points. You know, Jamari McDowell came in, gave him some good minutes there at the end, hit those clutch free throws. McCullough had a triple-double that Bill Self said was ugly, but it still was a triple-double. But I want to go to one part of this game, and that is when KJ Adams fouled out with 3:46 to play, Kansas was down 6. Kentucky had regrouped. They had retaken the lead. They had momentum on their side. And that's when you probably sit here as a Kentucky fan going, oh, baby, we're going to finish this thing. As a KU fan, you're like, oh, man, who are we going to put in place of KJ Adams? And what happened after that was DeJuan Harris hit 2 3-pointers, and he hit 2 free throws. He scored the next 8 points, I believe. And his I think his last 3 or 2 free throws tied the game. And then, of course, KU went on to win the basketball game. To me, you can point to lots of different times in this game that were important. The 3 before halftime by Dickinson was, I thought, a very important play that brought him within 7. But DeJuan Harris hitting those 3s after Kentucky had the momentum and KJ Adams had just fouled out, to me, that was the reliever, what's the way they call that, the fireman in baseball out of the bullpen. You're putting out the fire. You're maybe not closing it, but you're putting out the fire when you really need to, and that actually saved the day instead of the guy coming in for a 1-2-3 ninth. I thought Harris saved the day right there. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, I mean, he was our player of the game. And when in the history of post-game players of the game on radio or TV does a guy that goes for 27 and 21 or a guy that has triple-double not get player of the game?
That's crazy.
And Kevin McCullough and the aforementioned Hunter Dickinson did not. It was DeJuan, because in all those big moments, as you alluded to, he was the guy that orchestrated the big plays. And this is a kid we couldn't get to even attempt a shot for the first 3 halves of the season. Going back to the opener where he was 0-for-0 from the field, and then in our second game after NC Central, we played Manhattan. He didn't finally put up a shot until the 2:08 mark in the first half. But he almost went, what would that be, 60 minutes of basketball without attempting a shot, and all of a sudden he's taking and making every big shot in the house that Jordan built versus Kentucky. So he put out on his TikTok or his Instagram or some social media I don't follow, hey, I'll shoot him when they need me to, because people were giving him crap for not taking the shot.
Sure.
And they said, hey, you're a great passer, you're a great defender, but we're going to need you to score. And I even asked Bill on Hawk Talk after the first game, in a complimentary sense, have you ever had a player that didn't attempt a single shot affect the game more than DeJuan Harris did in the opener? And he said, yeah, Brian, but I don't think that's a good thing. He said, I get your point. He definitely impacts us in other ways, but we need him to be a scoring presence for us. And sure enough, when opportunity knocked and his team absolutely had to have it, DeJuan Harris was fantastic.
He was. He really, really was. And he's fun to watch. I really enjoy watching him play. Look in the pass first, but, you know, like you just said, he's going to have to hit some shots, no doubt, for this team to go where they want to go. I know you're getting – what a rough assignment. You get to go over to Honolulu for the Maui Invitation. Of course, not in Maui because of the fires and the disaster that took place there. It'll be in Honolulu. But this field is – I knew this field was tough, but I hadn't had time to really look at it until the other day. Dear Lord, Tennessee's ranked 7th in the country, top half the bracket. Tennessee 7, Purdue is number 2, playing number 11 Gonzaga in the first round. Kansas, if they beat Chaminade, which they should, well, could very well play the number 4 team in the country, Marquette, in the semifinals, and then play number 2, 7, or 11 in the championship game. Or if Kansas would stumble against, say, Marquette or UCLA, they could be playing a third-place game against the number 2, 7, or 11 team in the country. Just real quick, quickly, your thoughts on this field and how important this tournament is for KU early in the season.
Well, I've heard a lot of people say this is as loaded of a Maui field as it ever had, based on the way the rankings come out. And this is obviously the number one tournament every year. You always have 3 or 4 ranked teams. But to have that many in the top 10 or 11 is truly special. To have that many in the top 2 is truly special. And so we're all hopeful for that ED versus Dickinson matchup in the title game. But there's no guarantee we're going to get there. I remember, you know, the number one threat to Kansas 4 years ago, we were out there, got upset on opening day, and it disrupted the entire bracket because that's usually the level of parity you have out there outside of Chaminade. And thank goodness we're the one seed and we get Chaminade. Yeah. Not that we're counting our Jayhawks before they hatch, but, you know, when you consider some of those other first-round opponents, it's nice to know you're going to have at least a hefty advantage in one of those games. But, you know, the importance of it, I think you asked. I mean, here's the deal. If we go 1 and 2 out there, is the ship bringing holes and sinking fast? Not at all. You're going to have a dozen more chances between now and Selection Sunday to beat similarly ranked opponents because of how tough KU's schedule is. Maybe not a dozen, but 8 to 10 more chances. Right after they get back, you host the defending national champion UConn. You're going to have a road trip to Indiana on December 16th. I mean, this 4-week stretch, much bigger than Maui, is just so daunting, start to finish, and it started with Kentucky, obviously, so there's one top 25 win. My point is, my hope is we go out there and win at least 2. Obviously, we want to win the thing. If they went out there and were to stub their toe, I would want to see, well, how competitive were they in some of these games? Mm-hmm. But I would tell you, don't panic, because you're going to have multiple other opportunities before non-con season is even over to get ranked victories, and I don't think anybody's going to think less of you if you take one on the chin out there. I mean, it's almost expected at Maui when you have that kind of field. So we'll see. But I'll tell you this much. Kansas, even though we had to kind of pull victory from the jaws of defeat the other night, if we went out there and went 3-0, holy moly, and then you do start to separate with number one at the top and then everybody else looking up at you. You know, we felt that would be that this way for this team this season back when they were at full strength with Arterio Morris in August. When he was dismissed from the team, we've not, I think, felt the same distance at the top. I think you got 6 teams that could all vie to be in that perch, and nobody would argue. But, man, if you go out and make a statement in Maui, then separation starts to form. It doesn't mean you still have it come Selection Sunday, but Kansas would be the consensus resounding number one if you win a field that good.
All right, your travel schedule. When do you head out to Honolulu? You got the Sunflower Showdown Saturday night, and then KU plays Monday in Honolulu.
Yeah, so we'll fly out early on Sunday. You know, don't feel sorry for us, you know, with what I'm about to tell you, because we're still in Hawaii, which is great. But because of the back and forth, we don't get any extra time out there. We've got events every single night for fan engagement, so it won't be like previous Maui Invitationals where there's, like, an off day to go surfing or sit Mai Tais on the beach. We literally, on Thanksgiving, based on the travel getting back, we get in at 6 a.m. on Friday morning in Topeka and have to be back at the airport for football to go to Cincinnati at 11 a.m. So I don't even know if I'm going to go to Lawrence in between. So it's not quite as glamorous as it sounds. But let me tell you, it's still a blast because you're covering Bill Self's Jayhawks. And we'll find a chance to get a picture or two on the beach. But because of the back and forth, it's not like some years where there's a whole lot of extra vacation-type thrills. It's all work once we get out there, and that's okay because it's a ton of fun and the highest of high level early season basketball you're going to see.
It's a work trip. I get that. Time for the off the wall question for you. I've never asked you this one. I know for a fact I've never asked you this. How much mousse does John Calipari put in his hair to keep it to where it never moves?
You know, I actually asked him this the other day. We were there, and I thought, you know, of all the things I could talk to the Hall of Famer about, I should ask about his hair products. And he said it's more than a dollop. It's two, and he puts it on both index fingers, rubs them together, and then gets after it. Now, I have no idea, but I can definitely tell he uses quite a bit. I'm actually growing my hair out right now, and I only use a little bit of product, but maybe I actually should sincerely consult him because he probably goes through a decent amount. But he's a good guy. I've had a chance to interface with him a couple times on a few events that Kansas and Kentucky has held jointly, and he's been a class act and obviously a former Kansas GA before Bill Self was a GA. They never actually overlapped. There was a two-week gap that separated them from working together. But, go back to the Larry Brown era and all the coaches that were here and R.C. Buford and all that date back to that coaching tree. Pretty special stuff. But I have a lot of respect for him and certainly, you know, great to beat him because we remember him beating us in 2012. So nice to get another one against him and close that gap on the all-time wins chase, which went from up 10 to down 5 with the NCAA ruling to now down just 4 all-time, Kansas and Kentucky. Hopefully we can catch him by season's end.
And by the way, I just want to say this real quickly. Bill Self, I thought, looked so much healthier and in better shape on the sideline when I'm watching this game on TV. I thought his demeanor was a little bit different. Maybe they just cut to him at the right times, but he seemed to be a little bit more upbeat. Maybe it's because of the latitude that he knows he has a great team this year. Maybe that relaxes him a little bit. Don't get me wrong. I know he's going to get after the team when they don't do things right. But I just thought that man, he just looks so much better on the sideline physically, and I almost think he looked more relaxed to me, too. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, he definitely has worked hard on his diet, and he is working hard on trying to be relaxed, but that's that's asking a guy to do something left-handed after being a righty his entire life. But I think that he's done a great job in all of those measures, and we just hope he can continue to stay healthy because there's no better coach in the country when he's at full strength than Bill Self.
Absolutely. Hey, man, safe travels to Honolulu. Have as much fun as you possibly can. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a lot of fun off the court, but you're going to have a lot of fun covering all those great games and matchups in Honolulu. We appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. Sports Ticket brought to you, as always, by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair.